Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is the award-winning singer-songwriter from Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada, Jane Eamon. Eamon has been featured on NPR's Open Mic Show, has twice been named Folk Artist of the Year in her region, and was recently chosen as a finalist in Public Broadcasting's Mountain Stage New Song Contest. Her third CD, Deep Water, which showcases her amazing range in the genres of bluegrass, gospel, folk, and blues, was released last year to rave reviews. I'm talking to Jane Eamon by phone from her home in British Columbia, Canada. Jane Eamon, welcome to Out of Bounds. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I want to talk about the fact that you didn't release your first CD until 2004. So tell us when you actually got into music and songwriting.
Well, I actually wrote my very first song when I was 17. And I entered into a contest, and I didn't win the contest, but the organization who held the contest liked me so much that they brought me into Toronto to record it. And, I mean, that was kind of, I was hooked. I mean, I wanted to be a famous singer-songwriter, Joni Mitchell, blah, blah, blah. And about 5 years later, it wasn't cool to be a singer-songwriter who was female. It just, the only person who was really kind of doing it was Joni Mitchell, and she was kind of, you know, out in the fringes kind of thing, and it was getting into the disco era and into kind of a punk kind of thing, and it wasn't really, what I was doing wasn't really fitting, and my so-called friends that I had at the time said, well, you know, you're not that good, and, you know, you're not that, you know, you're not going to go anywhere with it, so I pawned my guitar for $25, and I didn't
do
it again for 22 years.
My goodness,
and
what a
I didn't
story
play,
that is.
I didn't sing, I didn't write, I didn't have anything to do, I mean, I was a singer, but rarely sang. Rarely, I didn't play an instrument at all, and my boyfriend, who we had split up, and then we got back together and we got married, that's a whole other story, dared me to write a song, and I did. I wrote a song about him, and I entered it into the BC Festival of the Arts, which is up here in Canada, and was accepted, and I was 46.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was like, holy crap. I seriously felt like, this is weird, like you guys have made a mistake. Like, I seriously felt like they had made a mistake. And when I went to the festival, I was the second oldest person there. And everyone else was like 20, 21, 22. They had recording contracts. Like, there's all this great stuff for them. And here I was, this kind of, you know, I wasn't even a housewife, this kind of middle-aged person who hadn't written anything for 22 years, and I was accepted.
Well, did you feel like writing during that 22 years, did you get rid of that bug as well?
You know what? I don't know. I honestly, I've been trying a lot because I've had a lot of people ask me that question, and I really tried to figure out what happened during that time frame. Like, I just really feel like I wasn't ready, and so my whole persona and everything to do with songwriting shut down, and it wasn't even an issue. It just didn't exist. And all of a sudden, when I was able to open it again, like kind of crack the door a little bit, it was like, oh, here we go. And I've put out 3 CDs since. So, yeah, it was kind of weird.
Was it something inside you that you started believing in yourself and you stopped listening to people? Or
no,
how did this metamorphosize?
I think you still go through that stuff. I mean, unfortunately, I have 2 inner critics, actually. One of them is male, who's quite hard on me, and the other one is female, who says, it's all right, dear, go have a cup of tea. and she's quite good, actually, because whenever I get kind of bogged down and frustrated, she just says, just don't do it anymore, go have a cup of tea, you know? So I do. But the male one is very hard on me. And I think that I didn't listen to the inner critics. I just, you know, I shut everything off. So I'm kind of glad they're there, because they kind of force me to do things, but, you know. It was a hard time.
Yeah, I'll bet. Now, when you write a song, you craft such beautiful songs.
Well, thank you.
Is it the melody or the lyrics that come first for you now?
Well, you know what's funny? I just came back from a contest. I was a finalist in the Mountain Stage New Song Contest in Canada. Didn't win. It was a phenomenal experience. So it's the first time I've ever come to Canada. And that question came up a lot. You know, it was like we had 10 very good writers, and, you know, what comes first? Well, it's like saying what comes first, the chicken or the egg. It's different with every song. Honestly and truly, it's different with every song.
So
you don't have any way of knowing, really.
Uh-huh. And during this 22-year hiatus, were you teaching yourself how to be a better musician?
No.
Or did
I didn't
you just pick it? Really?
Yeah, I didn't play at all. Not at all. I was a very unhappy person for a long time.
So you had absolutely no outlet till you came back into songwriting and performing.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So when you play publicly, does it ever change into something entirely different than the song that you were practicing or crafting all by yourself?
Oh, Lord, all the time.
Uh-huh.
All the time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have a really, I don't know if it's a bad habit, good habit. I have a habit. When I write something, I want everybody to hear it.
Mm.
So I'm very, very, once I'm done the interior kind of crafting thing, I want to take it outside of myself and perform it and have everybody hear it. My poor husband who plays with me. Because quite often I'll go, Gord, I wrote this afternoon and we're playing it tonight. And it's like, he just kind of goes, yeah, okay, whatever. What chord is it? You know, so, and then, but then, unfortunately, I gauge how good the song is by the reaction I get from the audience.
Ah.
So if the audience doesn't respond, quite often I will shelve it. It'll go back in the drawing board and it'll sit there.
Really? So part of you still doesn't...
In that respect, that's kind of weird, because
uh-huh.
it's like maybe I should let the songs kind of percolate a little bit before I put them out into a performance level.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And also trust your own voice.
Yeah, well, there's that thing. I mean, you know, honestly, how many of us actually trust our own voices?
Well, I assume when you get the guts to actually craft a song and present it to people, that's when you get over that hump. And you do trust,
to a certain degree, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've got to, like, I have a friend named Stephen Fearing who's a fabulous songwriter up in Canada, and he basically says, you know, you take off one hat and you put on another one. And you really have to physically put it into your head that you are no longer the songwriter, you're the performer.
Mm.
Because, unfortunately, the two of them are very different, and the songwriter's going to be hurt really easily if it's not appreciated and, you know, people don't listen and they don't like it. Whereas the performer has a little bit thicker skin. I mean, they can kind of take that stuff.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So you've learned that much through this yeah. young career.
I hope.
Now, I want to listen to an excerpt from Deep Water, your incredible CD. I want to play a cut from Black Wind Blowin'.
Oh, isn't that fun?
Tell us a little bit about it before we listen to it.
I don't know if you know about Factor in Canada. Factor is an organization that all the radio stations and I think TV as well pay money into this organization. And then they give out grants to musicians in Canada to produce recordings.
Mm.
That's basically what it's designed for. And it's very difficult to get. It took me 6 years to get them to listen to my music. And it's really only based on the merit of the music. It doesn't matter how good or bad you are as a performer. They're really, really looking at, do we think that this music has merit? Do we want to fund it? So it took me 6 years. So anyway, they funded this one. They gave me half the money to do the CD. And I pitched them that I wanted to do a concept CD, which was my tribute to traditional songwriters.
Mm.
And I had been going through some gospel stuff, and I went through some spiritual stuff last year, which was pretty heavy duty for me. And I had been listening to Woody Guthrie, and I was blown away by how incredibly wonderful he was to write these simple, simple songs that were so powerful and are still powerful today. I mean, they haven't changed in the time, you know, since he wrote them.
Absolutely.
And the whole hotel, Hurricane Katrina and what had happened in New Orleans was going on, and that was kind of in my head, as was Woody Guthrie, as was a song he did called Black Wind Blowing, and I just kind of put those all into my head and said, okay, now what would it be like if I had to write and I was Woody Guthrie? And so I set myself into that mind frame so that I could write that song.
Uh-huh. Let's listen to an excerpt from it.
There's a black wind blowing, it's blowing across this land. Woody Guthrie sang about it and it's coming back again. Gonna overtake us, every woman, child and man. That black wind blowing across this land. Trouble come, hey, hey, trouble come, hey, 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 hey. There's a hurricane a-howlin', gonna blow us down. Mighty winds and thunder tearing up our little town. Lordy, when it's over, whatever will be found. That hurricane gonna blow us down. Trouble come, hey, hey, trouble come, hey, 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 hey. There's a devil man, he's riding, he's hard in control. Too many poor folk giving up their very soul, laughing with abandon on that mountain of gold. That devil man's riding in control. Trouble come, hey, hey, trouble come, hey, 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 hey. We got some trouble coming, it's coming across this land. We're sending all the young folk off to fight in foreign lands. War here at home, it's getting out of hand. We got trouble coming to this land. Trouble come, hey, hey, trouble come, hey.
Jane, that's really a powerful song. It really sounds like an old-time protest song.
Well, and that's
with a new feeling to it, yeah.
That's kind of the point, right? I really, really, really tried to experiment with traditional forms on this CD because I'm not a traditional singer, and I really wanted to experience all the different types of traditional forms, and that's why I wrote them.
Well, it's really quite convincing. Now, I want to ask you this: do you think it goes with the territory that folk and the folk and blues genre often concerns itself with politics and current events better than other musics can?
I don't consider myself a political singer. However, I have written political songs just because you have to. I mean, there are some things that have happened that you can't be silent about.
Mm-hmm.
And I really and truly, I don't know if they go hand in hand. Maybe because blues and folk genres tend to be really simple musically, it's easier to get across your point without having to clutter it up. Like, for instance, with jazz, which is very difficult to, musically, it's quite difficult a lot of times. So I don't know if it lends itself to the kind of easy singing. I mean, folk, you know, if you know three chords, you can pretty much sing a whole lot of folk songs.
Mm-hmm. And folk always strives for the universal as well.
Yeah, it does. As blues does, too, I think. Blues is a way of talking, right? It's a conversation.
Now, you believe very strongly in supporting original music and songwriters. Tell us about that. You do workshops.
Well, after all of the crap that I went through to be a songwriter, my belief is that it's such an incredible gift to be able to craft songs. And I do everything that I can to teach and nurture and kind of encourage anybody, I don't care who you are and I don't care how old you are, to write. Because it's what an incredible form of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the cheapest psychiatrist you'll ever have. But, you know, truth being that if you can put words on paper and put music to it, oh, my God, you can speak to so many people with that. And it's a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So I support it as much as I can.
And how do you tell your upcoming students to trust their inner voice, something that you were never able to do and still struggle with?
I tell them my story. I'm pretty straight up about what happened with me and how I'm learning as I get older to listen to that voice and trust it. And I tell them, you know, it's going to be a struggle, and it will be. I mean, songwriting, I think Jimmy Webb said, if songwriting isn't hell on earth, you're doing it wrong. And it really, the more you do it, the harder it gets.
And really?
You become a lot more aware of what's good and what's great, and also what's bad. So your inner voices are going to get louder and louder, and hopefully, you know, one of them is going to be a little louder than the other ones, and it's going to be the good voice, you know, that keeps you moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically tell them just to listen to all of them. Listen to the inner critic. Listen to the, you know, the one that tells you to go for it. Listen to the one that tells you that you're full of crap. I mean, just listen to them all and just do it anyway.
Uh-huh. And do you get most of your inspiration from almost anywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'll be walking down the street and somebody will say something and I'll be like, oh, my God, that worked. I'll write it down. You know, and I tell people, be careful what you say because it might end up in a song.
Now, I want to talk to you about the fact that last fall you did encounter a real life-changing event when you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Can you tell us a little bit about how that changed your life so much?
Well, I weighed 210 pounds when I was diagnosed. And my father's diabetic and his father was diabetic and my mom's grandfather was diabetic. So it runs in my family. I'm the oldest. I had been warned by doctors and various things that, you know, if you don't kind of get off your butt and lose a few pounds and kind of straighten up, you're heading for pre-diabetes. And I pretty much chose to ignore it.
Mm.
Well, my sugar came back, I think it was at 11 when they did a, I don't know if it's the same in the States. I think it's different in the States. But it's quite high. I mean, 6 is normal, so it was quite high. I didn't believe them. And I basically told them to do the test again because I didn't believe them. Even though I knew in my heart that it was true, I didn't believe it.
So you weren't having any symptoms, huh?
Well, the symptoms were having to go to the bathroom every 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And blurry vision. And being really fatigued all the time. But I do a lot. I mean, I work and I also do my music thing. So I'm a pretty busy person. So I just figured I was burning myself out. Well, about a week later, they did the test again, and it came back at 9, which is still considered diabetic. I said, give me 3 months. Let me see what I can do. And if I can't control it in 3 months with diet and exercise, then you can medicate me all you want. And I lost 13 pounds in 3 months.
Wow.
And then I've lost 65 now. So I've lost pretty much all the weight that I'm going to lose. I'm not going to lose anymore. And my blood sugar, the last time they tested it, was 5.7, which is considered normal.
That's amazing.
So far, touch wood, I've been able to control it with diet and exercise. But I exercise every day. And it changed the way that I think. It changed my life. It changed my view on the future. It changed my belief in the spirituality. It changed everything. It changed everything. It also made me go out and get tattoos, too. But that's a whole other story, yeah.
Do you think it's going to change you in the long run as a songwriter as well?
Oh, yes, very much so.
In what ways?
I do not censor. Even though I have a very strong inner critic, I do not censor. I let it come out and see what happens. I'm a lot more adventurous than I was before I was diagnosed. Like, I flew to Toronto, and the first time I've been there in 33 years. I just got home on Tuesday, and went into a contest that I've never done that before either. So I did a bunch of firsts, and I really, I don't know, it's really made me realize that music is something that's really, really important in my life, and it's something that I need to address, and I need to address it with all my heart and soul.
If you're just joining us, my guest is singer-songwriter Jane Eamon from British Columbia, Canada. Do you want to continue on that dialogue that you were just talking about?
Yeah, I honestly believe that I've been given a second chance. And even though the motivator for my second chance was diabetes, I've read somewhere where a gentleman said, you know, getting type 2 diabetes was the best thing that ever happened to me. It gave me back my life.
Mm.
And when I read that, I kind of felt like, you know what? That's kind of how I feel. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. I mean, you get gallbladder issues when you lose lots of weight, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of other issues.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's okay. I don't know how much time I got left. So I'm going to do whatever I can do. If I can teach, I'm going to do that. If I can sing, I'm going to do that. If I can write, I'm going to do that. I'm just not going to say I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it next week anymore. It does change your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would assume so. Are you going to write songs specifically about this issue at some point, do you think?
I don't know. I've found that lately I've been writing a lot of songs about spirituality and about whether I believe that God exists, whether I believe in immortality. I mean, they're big questions. And I just finished writing a song a couple of months ago in June, actually, called If You Believe, on piano, which for me is not my instrument of choice. And it really was a hard song for me to write because it was basically me questioning whether faith exists or not and what it is.
Mm.
And why do we believe? Like, what is it about faith that draws us and brings us in? I'm working on a song right now called Sister Monica's Place, which is all about a storefront church, because I experienced storefront churches for the first time in my life when I was in Toronto, like this weekend.
Mm.
And I've never seen them before. So this was very cool for me, and I am trying to kind of come to grips with what it means. What is it? You know, there's a great book that I just found out about called Growing Faith Where Life Happens. And it's cool because it's kind of like, yeah, that's the way you should be worshiping if you're going to worship, is where you live.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's changed. It's changed my way of thinking, and I guess it's coloring my writing right now anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to play another excerpt from your CD, Deep Water, and I want to play the cut Ain't Gonna Get Wet.
Oh, yeah.
I love this. It's very gospel-like. And can you tell us a little bit about it before we listen?
I was driving to a gig with my husband, and I often will try to sing a little bit before I have to do a gig so I can warm up my voice, and that was my warm-up.
Ah.
I just started singing. And all those words just showed up. So obviously it was somewhere in the cosmos, and I just happened to pick up on it and started singing. And I have some friends here in the Okanagan who are fabulous female singers, and I just said, hey, guys, do you want to get together and see if we can sing this song? It's a silly little thing. I don't know if it's even worth putting on the CD, but let's try it. And we did it live.
It's great.
And it was so much fun because we were just like being silly. And we've shortened it actually from the cut that's on the CD, and we've actually sped it up even.
I think it's wonderful. So let's listen to an excerpt from it.
Ain't gonna get wet standing in the middle. Ain't gonna get wet standing high and dry. Ain't gonna get wet standing in the middle. Lord, hear children sing it. Ain't gonna float y'all standing on the bottom. Ain't gonna float y'all standing in the mud. Ain't gonna float y'all standing on the bottom. Lord, hear children sing it. Lord, hear children sing it. Ain't gonna change things standing with your back turned. Ain't gonna change things standing deaf and dumb. Ain't gonna change things standing with your back turned. Lord, hear children sing it. Lord, hear children sing it.
Sing it.
Ain't gonna change
sing
things.
It. Sing it. Sing it. Sing it.
Ain't gonna get
sing
wet.
It. Sing it.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a wonderful gospel song. And Jane, it does have a message.
I guess it's not
a silly song.
Well, I guess it's a kind of a nice way of saying, you know, you can't change things if you sit on your hands, so get off your hands.
Uh-huh. Get up and do something.
And
try to move the world with your spirit.
Well, yeah, one person at a time.
That's exactly right. Now, I've talked to a lot of women who record on their own independent labels. Would you like to be signed to a big label, or do you, as a songwriter, prefer the independence?
I think there's good things about both. I would really like the distribution that a label can offer. However, I really like having the artistic control that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I've worked in the last two CDs with Andrew Smith as a producer, I'm still pretty much in control. And he doesn't tell me what to do. I pretty much say, this is what I would like to do. What do you think? And I wouldn't want to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to me that if I make mistakes in the songs that I choose, they're my mistakes. You know, and if I pick good songs, it's my choice. You know, it's not anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been that way since I did my first CD, which was Bloom It On. I need to have control of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of women songwriters like Janice Ian and so on, and they say the thing that really bothered them about the big labels is the fact that they try to market you in a certain way and turn you into something that you're not, and then especially to women.
Yeah, it's all business.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm 54 years old. It's like, how much marketing are you going to do? Give me some pink spandex? Yeah, I think so. That's going to work. I'd hate to see me in spandex, boy.
Now tell me how the landscape in British Columbia, where you live. You live near, tell me the town that you live in.
I live in Kelowna,
uh-huh.
Which is in the wine belt of the Okanagan Valley.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of wineries here. I think there's like 130 wineries or something like that in our area. Very agriculture, lots of fruit, semi-desert, so we get very warm summer, very, very warm summer, not too much rain. There's a lot of musicians here, but we have a real shortage of support for kind of the original music singer-songwriter kind of thing. I mean, I've been here for 17 years, and I've been trying for a really long time to get people to buy into it, and I'm struggling with it. And actually, my husband and I are making a foray out to the east this fall to kind of take a look around and see what it looks like. And because we want to be a little bit more accessible to the eastern states and to eastern Canada in terms of playing,
mm-hmm.
It's a little bit costly to travel from here. So it's something we're thinking about. And there, like I said, there is a lot of really, really good musicians here. We have Andrew Smith, who produced my last two CDs, One Kerbal. So he's a really, really talented singer-songwriter, and there's a few like that here. So
Uh-huh. And I read that you really prefer cold weather, but you live in a desert. So how is this landscape affecting you as a songwriter and as a creative person?
I like to hide in the basement a lot, yeah.
And you don't feel like you can...
For writing, yeah.
You can't do it in the summer, huh?
I honestly don't like the heat. I love the sun, but I like it when it's like, you know, October and it's Indian summer and you have to put a sweater on and it's, you know, beautiful and the trees are gorgeous. I mean, that's my idea of a sunny day. When it's like, I don't know what it would be in Fahrenheit, but in Celsius it's about 40 degrees out. It's 35 here today, which I think is about 110.
My goodness.
It's a little warm, yeah. So you sit in an air-conditioned office and you stay there.
Wow. Now, do you perform alone or do you usually perform with your husband, Gord Brush?
Usually I perform with my husband, unless it's a singer-songwriter kind of a thing, and then I do it myself.
Uh-huh.
Because Gord doesn't write, but he, you know, we have a really unique way of playing. We play basically as one guitar, so it's kind of neat. Plus, I don't drive, so he's kind of the chauffeur, which is helpful.
And then when you play together, do you play your songs, or do you have a different repertoire?
Yes. I would say out of an evening's worth of music, there may be 2 out of 30 songs or 25 songs that I didn't write.
Uh-huh.
Everything we play, I write. And I write so many different kinds of music. Like, I'm not stuck in any one genre.
I've noticed that.
Well, and
you're amazing.
I mean, Deep Water was a little bit more genre thematic, but generally I write all over the map. I mean, I don't have any one particular genre that I like to write in. It's whatever comes out. And I really and truly am not stuck in one genre. Plus, I play guitar, so there's a lot of, I have a lot of genres in my guitar playing too, so.
I was wondering, how did you become influenced by what sounds like a gospel influence?
I took a gospel workshop with a guy named Eric Dozier, who was the artistic director of the Harlem Gospel Choir, and he was descended from slaves, and he travels around the world, basically, getting communities to make gospel choirs, but he also teaches about the slave experience, and he had writings and poetry and music from the slave experience that I had never heard of. And we spent 4 days with him. He got us to sing 10 songs, and of the 10 songs he taught us, I knew 2.
Mm.
And I mean, I know a lot of music, and I was surprised that I'd never heard of any of these songs. And I was so moved, because a lot of this music was about the Underground Railroad, and it was about, you know, going to freedom. But it was also joyful noise. That's what gospel means.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically a way to sing your joy and take you out of your misery without having any musical accompaniment. So there were no instrumentation. There was no, you know, there wasn't a band. I mean, it was just you singing and clapping and sharing your joy of being alive. And I think I wrote 4 songs. Yeah, 4 songs from that workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it spoke to me. It really, well, the title track from Deep Water came from that.
Yeah.
Workshop. And it was just, I didn't know what that song was about until after I'd recorded it.
Well, Jane Eamon, we are almost out of time. I just want to have you mention where people can get in touch with you, your website, and...
You can find me at www.janeandgord.com or janeeamon.com. I'm also myspace.com, Jane Eamon, and cdbaby.com has all 3 of my CDs. There's also a link on my website to buy the CDs. I'm going to be in the Maritimes in September, which will be fun, and a week with Eve Goldberg in Ontario. And, yeah, my email's on my website, and, you know, drop me a line.
Well, I hope you come to the Eastern United States sometime, because I would absolutely love to hear you. And I do recommend anybody who loves gospel, blues, bluegrass, Jane Eamon does it all, and she does it fabulously. So check out her CDs. And, Jane Eamon, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, and thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by Finger Lakes Arts Grants and Services. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.